It's time to get the inside scoop on the Utah Jazz. From the play-by-play voice of the Jazz, David Locke.
Sweet revenge!
Presented by Murdoch Auto Group.
Ow!
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Live from the Dish Bros, Jeremiah Jensen, Mitch Harper in for Alex Keery this week. And it is now our pleasure, as we do each and every week, to welcome in the creator of the Locked On Podcast Network and the voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke. Locke, how you doing today?
I'm good. Mitch, how are you? Jeremiah, good to talk to you. Fun, exciting day in Salt Lake, huh?
I know. Let's before we get into the Jazz, I'm dying to get your reaction because you've worked and lived in this market for a long time. If this happens and the NHL comes to Utah, wow, I never thought this day could come, and here we are, and it's getting really close. Your reaction to the NHL possibly coming to Utah as early as next year?
Well, I mean, I think Ryan Smith has a real vision of what he's trying to do with our community and how he's trying to build it out and, you know, show its depth. And I think he's, you know, very interested in building Utah into something bigger than it is right now. So this is all part of that. He's obviously bullish on hockey. He's made that clear in multiple interviews. The business model that the Ryan Smith and the Jazz have used since Ryan took over, which is fewer sponsors but higher profile for those sponsors. So you see America First Credit Union at a higher level. You see Delta at a higher level, but you only have one credit union, or, you know, Zions Bank, and you only have one bank, and they're profiled higher, unlike it used to be where you could have had, I mean, I even had broadcasts where I had as many as four or five credit unions advertising in the same broadcast. That model, I think, opens up the capability for Salt Lake City / Provo Ogden to have multiple teams in the same market, because of the fact that the biggest question against it over the years was, are there enough corporate dollars? Are there enough corporate, you know, businesses to be able to carry two franchises? And I think that, you know, by changing the way they're doing advertising, I think they're going to be able to possibly serve their clients better and have more involved and be able to answer that question.
Now, you've worked in a big league market like Seattle. And I want to ask you this question.
It was pretty great, by the way, just to, like,
and
I can't
imagine. How did that impact that market, having multiple of the big four leagues in town? How will that impact Salt Lake City and Utah?
Well, I mean, it's just nuts. I mean, that obviously when I was in Seattle, it was Sonics, Mariners, Seahawks, Huskies, and the Huskies are basically a pro team. It's just kind of endless, right? There's just always something going on. And, you know, you got into November and you had an NBA game, an NFL game, and a college football game all in the same week. And if you got in September, you had all four at times. You know, it's just kind of constant. It just makes you feel like a really big city. And so I think it's, you know, those are the things that are great. I think it makes life better for your citizens and makes your communities tied better and gives you more to root for and me to be a part of. And, you know, there's all sorts of, you know, we can get really deep on this, but there's all sorts of things that are out there about how much less time we're all spending together as individuals and how much less community time there are. And, you know, this just brings the community together in another place to do it. You know, and maybe in multiple, for all we know, multiple places to do it. I don't know how, you know, I don't know how the arenas are going to work and things like that. But, and then you also have concerts and all the other things that Ryan's really changed. The amount of, you know, the shows that are coming to Utah are just much more common and bigger shows than we used to have coming to Utah. Not to mention, you know, Dana White and his group, you know, UFC coming. So I just, you know, we're just seeing Ryan's on a mission to change where we sit in the sports landscape, and he's certainly doing it.
you bring up the arenas, and like I said, we don't know all the details if that NHL team, when it's all crossed the T's, dot the I's to where they're going to be playing. But if they're in the Delta Center, they'd be the 11th franchise that shares a venue with an NBA team. Does the NBA and NHL, when they come to like discussing schedules, they collaborate on figuring out dates to make sure they're kind of in a alignment so there's not any sort of crossover? Do they communicate at all on that?
Well, I mean, I think – I'm not sure I followed your question because I actually thought you were going somewhere else, Mitch. Sorry, so that's my bad. I did that evil thing where you're like, oh, this is where he's going. Here's my answer, and then I think you pivoted, or at least you pivoted. So, I mean, there is – there's coordination, obviously, with scheduling, and somebody's your primary tenant, and then somebody else is your secondary tenant. So, you know, for the Clippers at crypto.com, they're the third tenant. So they – the Lakers are first, the Kings are second, and Clippers were third on scheduling. That's why they're now building a building in Inglewood. You know, the one that gets really interesting on this to me is with the proliferation of concerts, right? So this is we don't talk about it a lot. It's not our world, but if you kind of read the trades and things, this is like the greatest era ever of concerts post COVID and with music streaming. So the artists aren't making money on their music the way they used to, so they need to do concerts. And then because of the community, people seem to be turning out to do community-centric things more often than they did post-COVID, and so this is the greatest run of concerts. Well, if you suddenly have, you know, from October 1st to April 15th, you have 82 nights already full because you have hockey and NBA. And then it's not just those 82 nights that are full, because there's actually a bunch of nights you have to block off just for schedule makers, right? Just logically, the NBA needs a bunch of nights blocked off for you to be able to get to the 41 nights that they're available. And then the NHL would need the same thing. It makes it incredibly difficult to have all these have concerts from October until April. So I do kind of wonder whether or not you're going to see almost every single market have two arenas because of the fact that it just with the proliferation of concerts, that it actually makes sense to be able to have those kind of nights. You know, if Disney on Ice wants to come for 7 days, but the hockey team needs to be in town at the same time, well, you know, right now Disney on Ice comes and the Jazz just go out of town. Okay, well, that's not a big deal. But if Disney on Ice comes for 7 days and then the Jazz and the hockey team have to go out of town, well, they got to make up those dates. Well, then that's just blocking a whole other section. So I do almost wonder whether or not the model in almost every one of these cities is going to be two arenas. And that's why we have 11. Okay, you know, one of them is LA. I think they have something crazy like 400 events a year in 365 days in that in arena.
Unbelievable. Well, it's a good problem to have.
You know, they do a lot of, you know, 1 o'clock, 7 o'clocks.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. I remember in the playoffs they had to do that when the Clippers and Lakers were in the playoffs at the same time. They had to work all that out. But that's a good problem to have, and I just can't the possibility of this is happening, it's a little surreal, but I'm just so fired up about it. I'm excited about
I mean, I will tell you that, like, it was probably 6 to 8 weeks ago, someone said to me, like, hockey's coming to Salt Lake and next year, and Phoenix is getting their team, and Phoenix will be guaranteed an arena, or guaranteed a team when they guarantee themselves an arena down the road. So this has been talked about, and the route by which a lot of people thought this was going to play out.
Yeah, and then let's be honest, like, we're not naive. These things don't happen in one day.
Right.
They just come to the surface on one day in a report, but these things take a long time to work out, and there's still a lot of things to work out, but it seems inevitable at this point. Let's turn to the Jazz real quick before we let you loose, Locke. I was watching your Locked On Jazz today. You talked about Colin Sexton. He missed his first game last night, but you mentioned you believe he's the story of the season for the Jazz. Why?
Well, because, you know, a year ago, I think the story was Lowry and how good he was. And yeah. I think Collins made that same jump this year, that Collins a really viable NBA piece to a good team. You know, I don't think that people knew whether or not he was a viable piece to a good team, frankly. I think they knew he could score, but he scored in a more efficient manner involving his teammates. You know, is he a starting guard or a sixth man? I don't really know. It depends so much on the rest of your roster, but, and then I just also think he's just a really positive person to have around. He's infectious. His energy level's high. Play hard matters in this league. He plays hard. He's not a, like, picturesque defensive player. He's kind of decent on the ball and probably suboptimal off the ball. But he's offensively, he's as good a driver as there is in the league. He's moved himself into a top 15 pick and roll player. He's really evolved, matured, and developed into a good basketball player. And I don't know that that's what Cleveland thought they were giving up. I don't know if that's what the Jets thought they were getting. And I'll be perfectly honest, I didn't think he'd be at this level. I thought he had great skills, but I thought Will had kind of tapped his specialness when he was using him off ball, swinging it to him and letting him just drive downhill and, you know, playing him off the ball with an advantage. I did not think that the day would come where Collins running pick and rolls with some patience and understanding and slowing down and finding open guys. That's a skill set he added throughout the year. It's pretty great.
You also mentioned that you enjoyed watching some guys play for their NBA lives and NBA jobs last night and for this last part of the season. And you've seen that. Johnny Juzang, 27 points, 7 of 8 from 3 against the Warriors. Luka Šamanić did some good things last night. What are some of these things you've witnessed about these players, and who do you think has really helped play their way into league in the future with what they've done these last few weeks with the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, hey, I got it. If you're a Jazz fan, particularly, you know, fans, there's nothing wrong with this. Like, the reason we're fans is because we somehow get some rush out of winning, right? Like, that's why we dress up in an outfit and we go to a game and we root for the BYU Cougars. And if they win on, you know, even if they beat, you know, Rice, we feel better about ourselves, right? Like, it's just a weird thing, but it's true. It's just how it works as a sports fan. Like, if your team wins, you're like, yes, like, you're fist pumping because you're excited, right? You're clapping because you're excited. I get it. And I think that's great. It's why we all have a living, and it's a unique phenomenon. Like, Sebastian Junger's book Tribe touches into it, and it's really interesting. But I think so right now is no fun, because you're not getting any of that from the Jazz right now in this losing streak. But I do think from a humanistic standpoint, you know, and I'm not trying to, as I said on the show today, I'm not trying to have them plead poverty. You know, they've all made a lot of money, but they're trying to stay in the league. And, you know, the thing about this is, like, remember Joel Ballenboy? Gone. Remember Elijah Hughes?
Yeah.
Gone, right? Like, remember these guys? Like, they're just gone. They just disappear from the landscape. It's over. And the average player in our league lasts, like, 3.5-4 years. And so, you know, guys just disappear. Like, you think back at, like, gone. Like, Trey Burke kind of lingered for a while. But, you know, there's always, you know, Jared Butler's hanging on barely, but probably gone at the end of this year. And so these guys are playing for a chance to not be in Europe and to be in the NBA and to live the life. And it's kind of awesome to watch and see them try to, you know, leave that lasting impact and get themselves another opportunity. It's the part of me that actually thinks that we should be, Corn Ferry Tour. Like, I actually think the most interesting week of golf, if we ever package it right, is like that last week of the Corn Ferry Tour when those guys got a PGA Tour card. Like John Feinstein's book, The Q School, is incredible. Like, to me, you know, the Epson Tour, the women's, like, yeah, let's go watch that. Like, you know, how someone hasn't really turned the Corn Ferry Tour into, in a day and age, I'm really babbling here, apologize, Mitch is going to, like, look at you, Jeremiah, and be like, dude, is he always that crazy?
yes, he is. That's why we love him.
But seriously, like, in a day and age of Amazing Race and Survivor and all these reality shows, is there any greater reality show than, like, the Corn Ferry Tour? Like, a bunch of guys trying to make the PGA Tour? Like, really, that's, like, that's reality TV in the finest level. So, you know, we have a little bit of that. We have the Q School going on right now in the NBA for 8 teams, and they're battling, and these guys are battling. And, you know, Šamanić, like, I thought the first half played crazy nervous, and I think he plays nervous. Like, he just plays tight, and every now and then instinctual plays happen to him, and he makes a really good play, and you're like, oh, well, that's okay. That's what he can do. Like, how do you get him comfortable enough that he doesn't, you know, that he just plays? And I think Omer Yurksaven put up, what, 20 and 14 against Nikola Jokic? Like, someone's going to see that in the league and be like, oh, okay, I'll take him as a third big. Well, third big's $1 million.
Yeah, there you go. Gave Netflix a multi-million dollar idea, too, with that Corn Ferry Tour idea. I'd love to see that and watch that. Jazz Rockets last home game.
I would prefer keeping multi-million dollar ideas to myself. But
Well, then why don't you make it happen? There you go.
Never know.
Jazz Rockets tomorrow night, 7 p.m., last home game, then Clippers on the road, 8:30 p.m. on Friday. And then the season finale at the Warriors, April 14th. Lock, next time we talk, it'll be the off season. How about that?
I hate that.
I know.
Everyone used to always walk up to me like, oh, my God, that's the greatest job ever. So, like, you work from, like, October 1 to April 15th, and then you're, like, off. That's the greatest thing ever. And I'd be like, or not.
Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. let's see. Because this brain just goes away and shuts off.
Uh-huh.
And I sit still super well. Can you tell?
You'll be up to something.
My strength in life are sitting still calmly. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
That's on the top 10 list of things I do well.
Well, we got one heck of an off season to cover here coming up, so I think it's going to be pretty dynamic and fascinating. So we look forward to that. Locke, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on each and every week. We enjoy it.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Jeremy. Mitch, nice to see you. Keep up the good work. Nice to talk to you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. Okay. All right, that's David Locke, the voice of the Utah Jazz, kind enough to share some time with us today. Somebody who's spent some time in a market like Seattle where they have multiple pro sports teams, not as many as they used to, although now they have the Kraken, even though they don't have the Sonics. But there's something about those multiple league cities. It just elevates the city and the profile of the city, and Utah's about to take that step.
Well, and it's a great point about with the scheduling, and because you always think of the, you know, Valentine's week, the Harlem Globetrotters are going to roll into the Delt Center, and then you got all these like appointment things in the Delt Center. Assuming the NHL Utah team would be in the Delt Center, there's all these scheduling quirks that go in. There's so much that has to get done, and again, it emphasizes, going back to the Coyotes, that something's got to get done in this next maybe 8 days. So hopefully they can get a resolution here and get this the ball rolling.
The exciting times here in Utah and in Salt Lake City. We got to take a short break. JJ and Alex live from the Dish Pros. Best and Worst is next after this.